Shelley walked up to Jeff and without a sound grabbed him by his left ear, which made him squeal in pain. Pulling him close, but without loosening her grip, she snarled,
"Nobody but nobody calls me babe.
But on the other end, you did help me out in a big way, so thanks muchly for that, Jeffrey boy."
Ray looked over to Jeff. "Oh, well done, that man." Shelley let go of Jeff's ear and left him whimpering on the ground. She walked back over to her guard, who retrieved the electroprod staff and handed her what looked like a pink handbag. Opening the bag, she pulled out the universal remote. Jeff and Ray could only look on in semi-curiosity as she examined it.
"Right then. Thanks to the success of your mission, I'm going to show you what this thing does. And why it's just made me the most powerful bird in the old bleeding universe."
She prepared the speech earlier. Ray felt he had to at least try and reason with the power-mad ruler. He stepped forward gingerly.
"Your Majesty, I thought we had a deal, you know. We get you the remote and in return we get our freedom."
He was surprised to see that the Queen had allowed him to talk without interruption. And she seemed to have a pleasant, patient smile on her face as she did so.
"You're an intelligent woman. And after all, you have the universal remote. What more could you possibly want from us?"
Ray had stopped pacing and gesticulating. He realised that he'd run out of paces and gesticulations. Still, the Queen looked uncharacteristically smiley. Then she quickly clouted him on the head with the remote, which Ray had to admit hurt. Quite a lot. Jeff put a defensive arm around his friend's crouched shoulders.
"He's got a point, you know. What else do you need us for?"
"You've both got a point, mate. I don't need you, either of you, but I do have a little matter of revenge to sort out. And seeing as old Scumpy here hasn't got a lot of air to lose now, I think I might as well vaporise both of you and your poopsy little spaceship."
Jeff and Ray gasped. The Mad Monarch pointed the metallic controller directly at them and pushed one of the buttons, grinning horribly. There was a click from the remote, a low, distant rumble. Then, like a sudden total eclipse of the sun, it went dark. Up above the landing platform, from out of the clouds, the furious anger descended, vibrating the air, the ground, and the teeth of everyone below. The Queen was stabbing the buttons on the remote madly, screaming in anger. But whether it was providence or something miraculous, it was an opportunity, if nothing else. Grabbing Ray by the shoulder, Jeff raced toward the Queen and their spaceship. At that moment, the huge scarlet battleship above them opened fire on the palace, its bright blue beams sizzling into the stone towers with ease. Ray ran over to the marshmallow penguin side hatch and wrenched it open with both hands. He looked around and saw Jeff racing over to the insane with rage Queen, looking like he was going to rugby tackle her. Jeff rugby tackled her. The Queen yelled out in frustration and shock as Jeff's shoulder ploughed into her waist and knocked her off her feet. The universal remote flew out of her hand and skittered off across the platform. Up above, the underbelly of the battlecruiser opened up a number of sliding doors and ominous, red armour-clad commandos abseiled down, blasting everything in sight. Some of the Slarg guards joined the battle, firing back with their pulse rifles and throwing golden spears. In the midst of the chaos, Jeff struggled and grappled with the Queen. He'd managed to climb onto her and hold her wrists for a brief moment, knowing that her impressive physical strength would soon kick in and he'd be pummeled to the ground. If there was any ground left, that is. It was beginning to fracture and split like an ice floe. And as he looked to his right, he could see the penguin beginning to bounce and shake, with Ray hanging onto the door handle with all his strength. Jeff saw the enraged expression on the Queen's face. He was about to get hurt.
really, really badly. So taking a deep breath, he stuffed his mouth onto hers and kissed her as hard and as passionately as he possibly could. 2 seconds of confusion later, Jeff pulled away. The kiss had served its purpose. The Queen was dazed, confused, and momentarily weakened. She even sighed a little sigh. "Gotta go, babe. Sorry," said Jeff. He flung his arm out to grab one of the cattle prod sticks near him and jabbed it into her side, pressing the discharge button as hard as he could. Shelley shook and convulsed, trying to yell out, but in a second, she was unconscious. "Come on, Casanova," screamed Ray. "We really have to go." Jeff jumped to his feet, scooping up the remote as he made for the spaceship's entrance. He dived in headfirst and rolled inside. Ray raced to the cockpit, punching controls to start the launch sequence without sitting down. Jeff pulled the hatch shut and the marshmallow penguin lifted off. It spun about and whizzed off the platform like a rat out of a drainpipe. Aboard his ship, Kelvin noticed the escape.
"Nobody leaves," he commanded. "Get them."
A gunner at the front of the ship swung a pair of evil-looking gun barrels around until they pointed at the ever-accelerating little ship.
"Fire!"
yelled Kelvin, clasping his hands together. The guns blazed, propelling 2 superheated balls of plasmic energy across the sky. One missed, but the other found its target, exploding across the stern of Ray's little craft, burning a hole through the outer layer of keratin and shorting out one of the propulsion systems.
"We've been hit!" yelled Jeff in terror.
"I know," replied Ray, equally terrified.
"It'll hold for now. Just get strapped in."
Jeff did as he was told. At that moment, the furious anger was set upon by a fleet of Profanian fighter craft that had scrambled into attack. They provided a welcome distraction, and it was just what Ray needed to make a break.
"Hasta la visto, gravy!"
yelled Ray as he gunned his ship's damaged engines into overdrive. The airship pointed toward open space and sped out into it. Safety, obscurity. Whizzing through the stars as fast as their damaged little craft could go, Jeff and Ray took stock of their current situation. Jeff looked at the universal remote. How such a seemingly small and simple object could make someone incredibly powerful and cause so much trouble at the same time was beyond him. "Who made this thing, Ray?" he asked. Ray was looking intensely at the controls in front of him, trying to work out what the extent of the damage was. He answered without looking up.
Well, the remote was created, or so the legend says, by the Methuselans. They're the oldest race in the universe. Immortals, basically. It's said that when the universe was first created, it wasn't working perfectly. Well, the major things, planets, stars, etc., but the minutiae needed tweaking. So the creator, if you subscribe to that theory, put together a tool that would fix certain things at a smaller level.
"Ah," said Jeff, trying to make the information fit into his already overcrowded brain. So this tool then, it's got the power to remake things? Well, how does it work? Or do you have to choose the settings or something?" Ray stopped testing the controls and looked up. He held out a hand and Jeff placed the remote into his palm. Ray pointed to the gold button on the remote.
"I think," he said, "that this does seem to be the main control, wouldn't you say?"
He turned the lozenge shape around, looking at it closely. Jeff shrugged.
"But when the Queen tried to zap us both, nothing happened. Well, why would that..."
"Eureka!" interrupted Ray.
"I'll tell you why. Look."
He showed Jeff the underside of the remote. Flicking a small catch, a section of the body has slid open, revealing a small compartment. From inside it, a small, square, rusty lump fell out onto the floor. Jeff and Ray looked at each other and in unison exclaimed, dead batteries. They laughed. Something that simple had saved their necks. And the Queen of the Slags wasn't even bright enough to check if the thing had a battery in it.
So it's useless then? Asked Jeff.
For now, yes. Safe at least, replied Ray. But we're not. The Penguin took a hit just now, and I don't think we've got the power to get to either the Methuselans or Kangazang.
Jeff frowned.
Oh. Oh, indeed. Apart from that, what about those soldiers in the red battleship that attacked the Queen's palace? It wasn't on our side either. I'm betting they're still after us too, whoever they are.
Oh, repeated Jeff. He chose to elaborate.
Oh, bugger. Oh, what's the plan then? He asked, scratching his head.
Ray put the remote down safely and touched the windscreen of the ship. It illuminated, projecting a map of the nearby star systems onto the glass.
Well, this might be handy, said Ray, enlarging a square section of the map.
Jeff leaned in closer to see exactly what he was talking about.
Repairs. I think we can get the damage sorted out here. It's called Orbitron, said Ray.
Jeff cocked his head at a quizzical angle.
Orbitron? Well, if you say so. But if this place turns out to be as hostile as the last planet, you can count me out. I'll stay on the ship, mate. Oh, it'll be fine, Jeff. We're not going to get any trouble from the Orbots, said Ray. They're programmed to help us out.
We're going to get captured, interrogated, and probably killed again, aren't we? Sighed Jeff despondently.
Will you relax? It's just repairs. Little tech support and we'll be off in no time. Honestly.
Jeff slumped back into his seat, clearly downhearted, as the Marshmallow Penguin sailed off in the direction of Orbitron. The surface of Orbitron gleamed. It was a million differing shades of reflective chrome, brushed silver and plastic, from clear perspex to flawless white polypropylene that could easily be mistaken for porcelain. Dotted all over the relatively flat plain were hemispherical dwellings, like igloos in a variety of different sizes. A scream echoed out from one of the dwellings. Inside, a tall, man-shaped Orbot called M4 jumped up from his chair and went into the front section of the dome. His partner, a pretty female Orbot named M25, was standing against the wall, shaking visibly and pointing to the other side of the room where a tiny hexagonal nut lay on the ground.
25? What is it now?
M25 pointed again at the innocent fixing on the floor.
What's that? I've never seen it there before. Make it go away, please.
M4's facial expression modules resembled a smile.
Don't be silly, 25. It's a hex nut. You have lots of them. So do I.
I know. But I've never seen one on its own before. Where did it come from? What does it want? Why is it looking at me like that?
M4 just picked it up and approached her. Calmly putting a gentle hand on her shoulder, he tried to placate her.
Look, it's fine. It's just a hex nut. See? Nothing to be afraid of.
M25 tentatively poked the nut with a slim plastic finger. She looked at M4 and smiled in relief.
Thank you, 4. I don't know what came over me. Nuts.
Yes, you are.
M4 walked over to the window and saw a small spaceship about to land. Then he fell over backwards, howling with laughter.
Look at that stupid hairy spaceship! I've never seen such a pathetic thing! It looks like a ball of iron filings!
As he rolled on the floor laughing, M25 walked to the door.
Come on, 4. It's waiting to land. Time to go to work.
M4 calmed down sufficiently enough to get back to his feet. He allowed himself another short chuckle.
Ball of filings. Priceless.
Ray stepped out of the ship. He took a deep breath and looked around.
Coast is clear, Jeff. You can come out.
Jeff reluctantly climbed out, hoping that nobody wanted to eat him, mate with him, or abuse him in any way. From over to the right, he could see one of the domed houses, its front door sliding open, and two shiny figures emerging.
"Ah, here comes our tech support," beamed Ray, waving to the two metallic figures in the distance.
Jeff looked at them in awe. He had difficulty accepting that these were real robots and not people in costumes. Their movements were smooth and lifelike, not the jerky movements he expected. More interesting than that was the female one. She looked a little nervous and wide-eyed, but she was so good-looking that it made Jeff feel a little embarrassed to look at her. After all, in his mind, she was little more than a toaster, a washing machine, a million light-years away from Totty. How dare she be so attractive?
"Hello there, Jeff Spooner," said Jeff, thrusting his hand out at the curvaceous computer.
"Blimey, she's a little jumpy, isn't she?"
"Yes, one has to be gentle with M25. She's a little nervous around strangers."
"Oh, I see."
"And humans."
"Gotcha."
"And spaceships."
Okay then."
"And me, and food, and stars, and noise."
"Is there anything she isn't scared of?" interrupted Jeff.
No, not really, Mr. Spooner, but she'll get used to you soon."
Ray stepped in. "I'm Ray. We need repairs to our spaceship. Could you take a look at her?"
M4 looked at the two men. He grinned, which Jeff found rather disconcerting.
"Of course, Mr. Ray. I'm M4, and this is M25. I'm sorry, Mr. Ray. It's just that... Is that your spacecraft?"
"Oh, yeah. Yes, it is."
"Why?" replied Ray, eyeing the twitching android with suspicion. M4 couldn't hold it in any longer. He burst out laughing. All Jeff and Ray could do was to look on in total puzzlement. They'd never seen an artificial being laugh so heartily, and it felt slightly offensive.
Look, said Ray, trying to muster some dignity. I know she's not much, he continued, but M4 was already on his knees, pointing at the ship and clutching his waist, which was an odd thing to do, as he didn't have any feeling in his waist at all. M25 stepped forward.
"I must apologise for my cohabitant unit, Mr. Spooner. He has a habit of miscomprehending the serious nature of many things."
"Well, that's all right," said Jeff. "He's only human... oid."
M4 finally returned to his feet.
"Yes, sorry about that, Mr. Ray. We both have personality defects. This is indicated by the prefix on our casings."
He pointed to his forehead, which bore an embossed letter M. "Malfunction?" asked Ray.
"Yes, that's right,"
replied M25, looking a little ashamed.
"Please don't judge us. We are still hard workers, despite our minor defects."
Jeff took M25 by her gleaming white hand. "It's all right, love. We're all dysfunctional in one way or another." M25 smiled. Then she looked down, screamed at the sight of Jeff's hand, and ran off. M4 burst out laughing again. "Bloody natters," said Jeff. Once he'd had a good giggle at the state of the spaceship, M4 seemed to be quite a competent mechanic. He fitted replacement parts quickly and efficiently, stopping from time to time to point out something quite trivial, which to him was hilarious. Ray managed to bite his lip and not clout the smirking droid with a wrench. Jeff was doing his best to look after M25, who was preparing some food and drinks. After an initial hour of random screams from her, Jeff was surprised to find that he could handle her odd personality. The shapely servant picked up a tray of food and headed for the door. Jeff followed her towards the parked spaceship.
"Well, can't they fix you then? I mean, with all the technology down below, they just dump you two up here while they get on with life?"
M25 swiveled her head a full 180 degrees around to speak to Jeff, while her body faced the other way as she walked.
"They have tried to fix us to no avail. I suppose you're right, Mr. Spooner. But there are more M-class Orbots up here than perfect ones below. We have formed our own community on the surface. Why should two differing species cohabitate, Mr. Spooner? We are clearly defective and as such inferior.
Jeff couldn't help feeling a little annoyed at her naivety. To him, it felt like racism, segregation. But in all walks of life, the rich and the poor stayed apart. Maybe it was a universal characteristic of sentient beings. It didn't mean that he had to like it, though. They reached M4 and Ray, who were making a good job of the repairs. "Cheers, M25," said Ray, grabbing a cup of water.
"He's pouring water into his head."
Jeff suddenly realised that M4 had a point. When seen from a different point of view, almost anything could be seen as humorous. He laughed too, and it felt good. He hadn't laughed for ages. "Listen, you two, there's something I just realised. Back on my planet, there are two roads called M4 and M25. Did you know that?" This started M4 off again.
"Really? That's fantastic. Hey, 20, they've named streets after us. We're famous."
Jeff waved a hand to try and cut the joviality short. You two need better names. And just because you've been stamped with an M as a badge of imperfection doesn't mean you should accept it. Ray wondered what he was getting at. This was a more thoughtful side of Jeff.
"Well, what do you suggest, Jeff?" he asked. "I mean, Bob and Sheila don't exactly fit, do they?"
M4 screamed in hysterics.
"Bob and Sheila! Priceless!"
"Well, I had a think, and M4, from now on, you're Gridlock. And M25 can be tailback. How's that?" suggested Jeff with a smile. M25 repeated the name tentatively.
"Tailback. Tailback. Yes, I like it. Thank you, Mr. Spooner."
M4 nodded.
"Gridlock? It's funny, but it's good to have a proper name like you, Mr. Spooner."
"And that's another thing. You can forget the Mr. Spooner nonsense, okay? Call me Jeff and call him Ray. Got it?" Both Orbots nodded in agreement. For the first time since their operation days, they began to feel accepted. Perhaps this would be the start of the new life that they dreamed of. Ray remembered the universal remote.
"Take a look at this, if you would."
He pulled the remote out of his coat pocket and held it out for the Orbots to examine. With an ear-piercing yelp, the female droid jumped off the ground and into Jeff's arms, where she sat, trembling in fear. "Oh, steady on, tailback," said Jeff. For the rest of the evening, Ray and Gridlock sat at a computer terminal and searched for up-to-date star charts, trying to plot a course to Kangazang via Methuselah. Jeff, as usual, had no idea what they were on about. This was fortunate for him, as he rather enjoyed being in the company of Tailback. All right, so she wasn't quite a real human female, but it was nice to be in the company of a woman who didn't hate him. Despite her random phobias popping up unexpectedly, he felt quite protective toward her.
"Is Gridlock your boyfriend, then?"
He was embarrassed to admit to himself that he was actually chatting up a machine.
"Gridlock is designated a male unit. He was the first Orbot that I came into contact with when I was assigned to the surface. Other than that, I do not quite understand your question."
Jeff tried again.
"Well, do you have feelings for each other? No, I mean, do Orbots know what love is?"
Tailback turned her head unit at a slight angle as she momentarily accessed a long-lost data file.
"Love. Biological models of both sexes tend to view love as a mammalian drive, much like hunger or thirst. Leading human experts in the topic of love divide the experience of love into three partly overlapping stages. Lust, attraction, and attachment. Lust exposes people to others, romantic attraction encourages people to focus their energy on mating, and attachment involves tolerating the spouse long enough to rear a child into infancy. Is that what you mean?"
Jeff blinked.
I've no idea what you just said, but I think you've got the gist of it."
Ray sat next to Gridlock, who had detached his right hand at the wrist and plugged it into a network portal on the wall. Once they'd downloaded the relevant trajectory and course coordinates for the journey, Ray asked Gridlock to take a look at the universal remote. It took a while for the giggling Orbot to calm down, but soon they were back in business. It was indeed missing batteries to make it work.
Unfortunately, Ray, there is only one location in the universe where the batteries are manufactured, and that is the planet Methuselah.
Methuselah? Oh, that's good, because I think we're being followed.
By the battleship that damaged your... marshmallow penguin.
Yeah. Hey, do you think we could identify that ship? Maybe find out who's chasing us?
Describe the ship as best you can.
Well, it was big and red. Gridlock fell backwards, howling with laughter. Ray sighed. It's going to be a long night. So, said Jeff, still on the same subject, but trying a different approach, are you and Gridlock in love with each other? He asked, noticing that he was completely out of his depth again. Tailback touched his arm.
Gridlock is not my friend, boy. He is closer to a brother, perhaps.
She smiled, which had the strange effect of making Jeff blush like a 12-year-old with a crush. Oh, well, that's fine. I just wanted to know the situation, that's all. Tailback pointed a smooth plastic finger at her smooth plastic face.
Kiss me, Jeff.
Jeff's heart and brain went into a fierce battle with each other. As such, neither organ was available for comment. Ha, said Jeff, trying to stall for time while his brain fought against an internal mutiny. Tailback took the initiative and held Jeff by his shoulders, and she planted a kiss onto his stuttering lips. Holding him there for a few seconds for effect, she saw his eyes close and his shoulders relax. Then she pulled away.
I assume you enjoyed that.
Jeff had to admit that despite the smooth and cold sensation, he did. And he smiled feebly. But Tailback didn't alter her blank expression.
I felt nothing. I'm sorry, but I seem to lack the ability to experience the feeling of love as you know it. I understand the basic concept and have a familial concern for Gridlock. My apologies, Jeff. I would like to be in love the way humans do, but the implementational data just doesn't exist.
Jeff smiled. Yeah, I know what you mean. Sometimes I think I'm a few files short of a program too. Jeff and Tailback turned around to see Ray and Grid hanging out of the window of the dome, laughing uncontrollably. The next morning, all was ready. Jeff and Ray stood at the entry hatch of the Penguin and bade farewell to the Orbots. What a great couple of droids, said Ray, as they watched the two robots leave the platform and enter their domed house. Jeff had to agree. Yeah, you know what? I bet they're a lot more human and a lot more fun than their so-called superiors underground. Oh, they'll be all right. I'll miss them, and I dare say you will too, eh? said Ray, giving Jeff a playful nudge with his elbow. Oh, get off. She's a nice girl. Orbot, replied Jeff, just a little embarrassed. Ray allowed himself a short giggle. Hanging around with Grid had obviously influenced him to see the funny side of things. They strapped themselves in. Ray made some pre-flight checks and opened the intercom channel. Orbitron repair station, this is the Marshmallow Penguin, ready for takeoff. Do you read me? There was no answer. Ray reiterated his request. Orbitron repair station, this is the Marshmallow Penguin, do you read me? Still no answer. I'll try another channel, said Ray, switching over. A short static burst signalled that they'd got through to someone.
Marshmallow Penguin, this is Orbitron Atmosphere Control, preparing to open in 25 seconds.
Thank you, Orbitron Control, said Ray. Wonder what happened to Tail and Grid, he mused.